Good morning. Welcome to the May 24th, 2017 Safety Officer Teleconference. Thank you for joining the call. I just want to remind everyone this call is being recorded to be available for playback later as a podcast. I hope I get some feedback. Hopefully some of you are taking advantage of the podcast feature to catch up with us later. My name is Walter Krajalis, President of Aeronomics. I am your host and discussion moderator. I'm an ISBAO auditor and aviation consultant and attorney, and proud to host these teleconferences as a means for safety officers to get together to compare notes and hear ideas dealing with issues related to aviation safety and safety management systems. Our sponsor for these calls is Allianz Aviation Insurance. I want to thank them for their support. And some quick ground rules. The call is 30 minutes. Again, it's being recorded to be available later as a podcast. So when you do wish to speak, no need to identify yourself with your full name or company. You know, just your first name is fine. And please use your mute button feature on your phone. This helps to cut down on background noise, but of course, remember to unmute yourself when you want to join in. And I'm calling from a landline today, so hopefully all should go well with the conference system, but if for some reason I drop off, it should keep going and I can just dial back in. So with all that formality done, I like to always recap from the last call what we discussed, and we discussed briefly about a compliance checklist and what were folks using, and then also we discussed how often folks are using or doing a FRAT, whether it's a, you know, filling out a risk assessment for every flight or just for the day or whatever. I did get a little feedback. I saw on the safety category of airmail that, you know, that compliance checklist that's in the ISBAO SMS toolkit is rather minimal, and I would agree, but it is an area that should be taken very seriously and is often kind of a weak area in ISBAO audits. But just opening it up again, if there's any additional feedback that somebody has about compliance checklists or FRATs, the use of FRATs. If so, go ahead and unmute yourself and speak up. Okay. Another feature, I always want to bring up any aviation accidents related to business aviation since our last call, and unfortunately we did have one, and that was the one that made the media because it was the crash of that Lear 35 on approach in the Teterboro. I looked up on the NTSB website, and I did not see a preliminary report yet of that accident. Just wondering if anybody had any feedback about that or something they want to bring up about that particular accident.
Yeah, well, for that accident, points to, you know, let's just call it all preliminary. And I totally hesitate to go to conjecture or unfit quarterbacking, but there were some visual reports of what.
Could you speak up? I can barely hear you. I don't know if it's my phone or.
Yeah, there were some people sitting on the end of the taxiway there, I think Lima taxiway. They
right.
Watched it happen. I've harped on positioning or pre-positioning for years, and I started talking about this long before I ever saw anybody else talking about it. When two pilots are alone in an airplane, sometimes they act differently than they do when there are people behind them. And positioning accidents, I think, are a big contributor to fatalities and airplane accidents. I don't know what it is about not having people in the back, or sometimes people need to fly the airplane differently than when they have people in the back. What two pilots saw when they were sitting on the taxiway was that the airplane apparently went into something close to a 90-degree bank, and that corroborates what was said over the tower frequency when they were reminded to make the turn. It looked like they were missing the turn. The tower called and reminded them, and then they went into a steep bank and pulled. That talks about a probable accelerated stall. Now, again, we don't have any information. If all of that actually did happen or didn't happen, that really doesn't matter in what I'm talking about here. What I'm saying here is that I'm reminding the people that are listening here to fly the airplane no matter whether you have people in the back, always fly the same. If they had people in the back of that airplane, they probably would have missed that approach. I would hope to think that they would miss that approach. Don't ever fly the airplane differently because you don't have anybody back there than you do when you do have people back in the back. That's just my two cents. That's my soapbox, and it's been that way for many years.
Okay. Well, thank you for your comments. anybody want to make a remark to that?
This is Rick Meyer. Our SMS system is the flightplan.com one, and they actually assign a score of 5 to a maintenance or repositioning flight on the flight risk assessment tool. And the second thing I would say is that website Code 7700 put out an excellent sort of refresher on particularly the Teterboro circles. That's interesting reading about how far out you should start the circle, especially when the crosswinds are like they were on that day.
Well, thank you, Rick. That's what I had heard. Yeah, they were doing the ILS 6 circle to land runway 1. And that, it, you know, could have been a stall spin. But, and who knows exactly, you know, what got him into that situation, but I agree with the first caller that repositioning flights are very when I was with USAIG as the safety officer, I did a study at one time as to the accident rate of repositioning flight, or where it was crew only versus with passengers. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it's a definite higher percentage because the flight discipline is laxed, get a little more casual. You know, you don't have the check valve of upsetting the passengers in the back if you're a little more aggressive in the turn or abrupt on a level off or something. So I totally agree that there's, you know, there is, you know, if we look at it from a hazards and risk standpoint, the hazard is of, you know, the potential of flight discipline being lax. So, good point. Anybody else?
Mark Potter here.
Yeah, Mark.
One emphasis I think that's missed in a lot of flying, both with my airline background and current, a lot of operators say, oh, well, we don't do circling approaches, where in essence we do, except they're mostly VFR, and we don't really practice our flying skills, you know, to be configured with the flaps 20 and the gear down and beam the numbers, where you're actually looking out at the visual point, you know, focusing on the ground and, you know, back into maintaining control of the airplane. So I think, you know, a lot of emphasis has to be put back on doing one once in a while, you know, just simulating a nice circling approach. We're missing our flying skills.
Well, thank you, Mark. Yeah, good point. In the world of automation, you know, they're saying that we generally are losing the basic primary hands-on flying skills, and we should practice them. Well, there's a dichotomy there. If, you know, if we're supposed to practice hand skills and we're not using the full automation, so where does one do that, you know? Does anybody have a program where they focused on hand flying skills?
Well, the FAA, this is Bob. The FAA, of course, issued a SAFO, or reissued one recently, and this is more to the point, you know, encouraging manual flight. But one point to add, I'm not suggesting it's anything to do with this particular accident, but in your risk assessments, when there's just pilots on board, some operators, depending on the crew pairing, may use that as a training opportunity, you know, outside the simulator. Oh, my gosh, I'm old school, so I've actually done that. That can certainly increase risk, depending on what kind of training we're doing. But the point of circling even. And continuing on to simulated NGL work.
Wow.
Certainly to the risk. Anyway, that's just two quick points.
No, good point, Bob. I mean, it is regular. It's a regular thing in the industry that on deadhead legs like that, well, the guy that needs the time and, you know, the stick time, you know, the new guy or the low time guy is the one usually flying that leg, you know. So there's that little bit of element of higher risk, absolutely. Again, we don't know what the Lear 35 really got into, but I do agree that all of these could be related to it. Interesting. Anybody else comment on that? I just found it miraculous. Nobody on the ground was killed. So, all right.
He used the term a stall spin, and I would hesitate to go towards the spin. I would think more in terms of snap roll. With an accelerated stall and maybe a little bit of rudder, the trailing wing under certain conditions, and maybe they met those conditions, trailing wing tends to stall. In a Learjet, that is not a good situation, and it's obviously unrecoverable at low altitude. And an instructor back when I was a kid killed the engine on me in a single-engine airplane, and he didn't kill it, but it was a forced landing. So I lined up on a field, and I was too high, so I started to slip in the turn. He said, whoa, 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 stop what you're doing here. Let me go show you what you're about to do. So we climbed on up to 3,000 feet and put myself into the same circumstances. And, I mean, it was less than a second, and I was upside down when I finally did stall. That was in a slip, and I'm not saying that they were slipping, but if one wing happened to be slightly behind the other in the Lear, I've got a lot of time in the Learjet. I know that it can have some fairly unforgiving stall characteristics. If it did go into a snap roll, then that would explain, you know, the circumstances that we saw that last picture in.
Hmm. Interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, Walt, this is Bob again. Just following up here, the safety alert for operators that I was referring to was dated May 4th. It's 17007. The subject is manual flight operation proficiency, and states the purpose. This SAFO encourages the development of training and line operation policies, which will ensure that proficiency in manual flight operations is developed and maintained for air carrier pilots. And, you know, clearly this is a FAA response to the Cholin of the Magenta, and I think we'll all be seeing more
that emphasis as we go through our recurrent training at either Flight Safety or CAE or the provider of your choice as that this trickles down. I mean, and I certainly see it among the younger aviators who are great, so disrespect, but they're great game players, but some of the manual skills aren't there.
Well, thank you for that, Bob. You know, I had the thought while you were reading that, it was like, okay, so this is, you know, in keeping with an SMS, external information, it's very applicable. You know, the FAA issues the SAFO. Here we have an accident that could have been related to hand flying on a circling approach, and it's easy to say, oh, it was an old Lear 35, you know, but that's not us. We fly the latest, you know, Challenger 300 or, you know, pick your choice of plane. And, you know, they were probably low time. And, you know, it's easy to just shrug off and think it doesn't apply. So if we put our safety hats on and just say, okay, this does apply, what should we do? I mean, we should do hands flying skills. So I know I have heard of operators in the past. I haven't come across any recently with the audits I do where, you know, they actually had programs where the pilots would go take aerobatic training, you know, at the flight school that had the Satabria or whatever. And there's some that they encourage light aircraft flying, just hands on, just for the primary flying skills. Again, making some, you know, the connection that it does apply to flying the jet. What other way would there be to get hands flying skills, you know, to try to comply with that SAFO? Anybody?
This is Peter. We, our director encourages us when we go to the simulator, so every 6 months of flight safety, he's big on hand flying the simulator, although the simulator, of course, isn't perfectly matched the airplane. At least it helps to kind of give a slightly risk-free environment to just constantly hand fly. So I know there are arguments for automation in the midst of emergencies and whatnot, and certainly we use that, but you know, to hand fly as much as we can in the simulator just to help keep our skills sharp.
Thank you, Peter. I would almost take issue with you on that. Yes, the sim is very realistic, but I don't know if it's the same feedback that the real aircraft does. You know, we're talking about hand flying skills. I don't know. To me, it's a little bit that, and I do buy into the philosophy: train as you fly, fly as you train. You know, you want to use all the full automation and get in, you know, practice those scenarios where you get into trouble. Here's how to fix it. I don't know. I see almost the hands flying part of it being a separate program, of getting in a light aircraft. Or do we do it on the repositioning flights and take that higher risk? Any thoughts?
Hey, this is Mark. I don't know that this point will necessarily give a great argument for one way or the other, but for my 10 years at Part 121, it seems like now, to me, in the corporate world, there's a bit of a stigma with hand flying. You know, we have this automation for a reason. We need to be using this automation. Absolutely, we should know it in and out. Certain airspaces are extremely busy, and the automation gives us a chance to breathe and have a wider sight picture. But for my time in 121, I really enjoyed the pilot cadre that we had, I mean, it seemed like the leadership and training really stressed that our pilot skills are every bit as important as our computer management. And for whatever reason, our little division seemed to encourage manual flight, even in foul weather, quite frequently. There was nothing actually written in stone or in FOMs or anything like this, but it just seemed like it was a culture within our 121 that they really encouraged everyone to fly. We've got two competent pilots here at any given time. We can put the automation back on. We can go around, whatever need be. But it seemed like we did quite a bit of hand flying right down to minimums. And I really felt like we had a good group of people because of it that trusted each other and operated really well. So, again, I'm not making a point in either direction, I guess, other than it just it seems to me that the industry as a whole has sort of changed its idea about how we operate, and it's sort of frozen people and stagnated them.
Good point, Mark. Anybody else? I like what you said, Mark, where, you know, the actual piloting skills is very important still, as much as knowing the automation. So, good point. All right, well, that all stemmed from discussion of that Lear 35 accident, and I also want to bring up that the Business Aviation Safety Summit, the BAS, which is hosted by the Flight Safety Foundation, was in Phoenix back on May 4th and 5th. Just wondering if anybody had an opportunity to attend that, and if they had any feedback they'd be willing to share. Anybody have a comment? I was all wired to go, and then, of course, aviation, something came up, and I couldn't go. But I did read an article from it that kind of related to what we're talking about. One of the issues that was brought up and discussed was the jet upset. That Challenger 604 that got caught into the at altitude above the Arabian Sea, the wake turbulence of a Airbus A380, you know, and it pointing out that we need jet upset training even more so with, you know, with the 1,000-foot separation up at high altitude. Any comments on that? All right, well, anybody have an issue or a topic they want to bring up? Any new topic? Something that you're dealing with in your SMS or you're encountering in your department and want to bring up, discuss with the group?
Walter, this is Rick again. Sorry, it took me a minute to get off of mute. My phone was all locked up. But on the high-altitude upset thing, our department is going to be cycling through that over the late summer and fall. Now there's a provider that our insurance company has a contract with, and it's actually surprisingly affordable. I think it's like $6,000 or $7,000 a pilot, and we're going to run the whole department through one of those high altitude upset courses.
Okay, thanks, Rick. What does that training consist of? Is it in a sim or is it in an actual aircraft?
No, it's actual aircraft. The explanation I got is that the fidelity of the simulators isn't accurate above a certain altitude just because they don't have any real data. You know, nobody's taken Falcon 2000s up and stalling them inverted at 410. So they use, there's a bunch of providers around. There was an article in AIN a couple months back about one. There's one in Mojave where they use, I think, A4 Skyhawks. There's one in Kissimmee where I think they use the L-39 Albatrosses. And then the one that we're going to be going with, which is AIG's contract provider, is in Norfolk, Virginia. area, and I think they use extra 300s or something like that. But it's a 2 or 3 day course where you go up. There's classroom instruction, and then they basically give you, you know, up into the flight levels. So I guess they can't do that in extras. They got to be doing something else. But up in the flight levels, you're doing, you know, accelerated stalls and you know, upset maneuvers and recoveries and things like that.
Okay.
Well, for one more thought on this Challenger accident, and yeah, recovery is great, but prevention is better. And neither the A380 nor the Challenger apparently were utilizing strategic lateral offset procedures. And if either of those aircraft were not on the center line, there wouldn't have been an event. In that part of the world, you know, most remote areas, slop is authorized, encouraged, and stuff like that. So, my two cents again.
Totally agree. The thought that comes to mind with you saying that. Does anybody take the wind direction at altitude? Doesn't matter because you're all in the same wind, right? So,
well, you're only allowed to stop in one direction, and that's to the right.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, if both of them had flopped 1 mile, it would have been 2 mile horizontal separation. You know, in any case, the accident, which you probably read, they went right over each other, or, you know, right over and under. What it appeared like, neither aircraft was applying the offset.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody with a further comment or a new issue they want to bring up to everyone? All right, not hearing anyone, so it's close to the time to wrap it up, so we'll actually wrap up a minute or two early. So I want to thank you all again for joining the call and for those who shared their comments. I apologize, I forgot to put the word out yesterday to announce the call. I'll try to do better next time. I want to thank Allianz again for their sponsorship, and please sign up for the Aeronomics Twitter feed and join the LinkedIn group we set up for safety officers to keep the discussion going. Our next regularly scheduled call, the way the calendar falls, it's in 3 weeks from today on June 14th. So keep your comments and questions coming in. Thank you, guys. And so in signing off, it's all about identifying hazards and mitigating risks. Right? So thank you, and talk to you again in 3 weeks. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.